Hello, this is Tom Campbell, host of a series of interviews with local band members and music industry professionals from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Today's interview is with Susie Mork from the Exotics and the 19th Amendment. Hello, this is Tom Campbell. Today is October 5th, 2014, and I'm talking via the phone with Susie Mork from the Exotics and the 19th Amendment. Susie, what is your full name, date of birth, and hometown, please?
It is Suzanne Marie Mork. Date of birth is June 7th, 1949, and my hometown is Owatonna, Minnesota.
What high school did you attend, and what year did you graduate?
That would be Owatonna High School as well, 1967.
When and how did your first band come about, and what was the band called, and who was in the band, and who played what?
Well, we started the band in 1964, but it was kind of a roundabout way because Carol Moe and I were in the orchestra in high school. We didn't know each other, but she played viola and I played violin. And when the Beatles came on, and Ed Sullivan, of course, everybody went crazy and wanted to be in a band. But my mom said, you know, your grades are falling. Do you want a guitar? And I said, yeah. She said, why don't we trade your violin for a guitar then, and we'll do that. So I got a Fender Duosonic, and I went down to Hanson's Music Store, and I took some lessons from a guy named John Putnam, who was in a band in southern Minnesota called Little Caesar and the Conspirators. Unbeknownst to me, Carol Moe was taking guitar lessons too, and we just happened to run into each other, and she was taking guitar lessons from him as well. And then, so we decided, well, maybe we should try to do like a lesson together or something like that. And then I believe Gary Sorensen was the lead guitar player for Little Caesar and the Conspirators, and he said, well, Carol, he said, I think Susie should play lead and you should sing and play rhythm and she can sing harmonies. So that's how that part of it came together. And at the same time, Sue Green was at Hanson's Music Studio taking drum lessons from Jim Barnhold, who is the drummer for Little Caesar and the Conspirators. So that's how the three of us kind of got together. And then they decided, well, why don't we get all these girls together and why don't we get them into a band? And so that's how it kind of fell into whatever. And Linda Knutson was Carol Moe's cousin. And she talked her into starting to take bass lessons. And so she took a little bass and she caught on real fast. And then Sue Conklin had a six-string bass. And I don't know if she was taking lessons at Hanson's. I don't recall that. But I know that Sue Green and her were very good friends and she would not form a band with the three of us unless Sue Conklin got to play with us. And so we had two bass players for quite some time.
And how did you come up with the name of the band, and what was the name of the band?
The Exotics, and I don't know.
Okay, so Carol Moe is doing the lead vocals, and who's doing the harmony vocals?
I am.
Anybody else?
After I prodded them quite intensely, yes, they all had to sing a little bit because if we were going to do Beatles songs, they're always three-part harmonies.
And where did the band practice?
Well, in my mom's living room and in Carol's living room, I think in Sue Green's living room. I don't think we ever practiced at Linda's house because her mother lived out in the country. So mostly living rooms.
What type of songs did the band first learn how to play?
Beatles. Then we went from there all the stuff that was happening in the 60s, like Martha and Vandellas and that kind of stuff. So anything that was popular, you know, Malaguena, all that stuff.
Do you recall the very first time the band played live?
Yeah.
Where was it?
Red Wing.
How did your first job go?
It was real fun. We were the opening act for Little Caesar. They were trying to get us into learning how to play gigs and play songs and put a set list together and that kind of thing. So it was fun, and we did that. We opened for them several times until they said, you know, just go out and do your own thing and book your own stuff. So we did.
Did you book your own band jobs then?
Carol Moe's dad did some of that, and he knew somebody else in Minnesota, in Owatonna, that I can't remember his name, but he was kind of helping him book the band for a while.
What other places did the band play live?
Lots of armories, lots of ballrooms, Battle of the Bands for the Heart Fund at an armory and raised money for cancer. We did, we played all over the place, sock hops, all kinds of stuff, schools.
Now, you're in what grade at this time?
We're in ninth grade.
Well, so who is driving you gals around to these jobs?
The parents. We had... As I recall, and I'm not 100% sure on this, but I believe Carol Moe's dad built a trailer for us. And we used to call it the Little Blue Doghouse because it looked like a little blue doghouse. And we would pack our equipment in there. And then one of the parents, all the parents had trailer hitches, and one of the parents would drive us to jobs because we were too young to drive.
Did you wear any kind of matching stage clothes?
Yes, we did.
What did you wear?
We had culottes, Madras plaid shirts, and cricket boots was one of them. Of course, we were totally into the Beatles, so then we graduated into bell bottoms, Beatle boots, and some kind of blouses.
Was there a band leader?
I'm going to say no, but I was.
Okay.
How's that? I'm going to say no because we all kind of made the decisions together, but I was usually the one that pushed everything to get going.
Did you pick out the songs the band played?
Or in the Exotics, I think we all did it as a group. I can't remember for sure because, you know, that's a long time ago. But after that, yeah, normally I was always the one that had to write the set list.
How long was Sue Conklin in the band?
She left in 65. I can't say when, but her parents had to relocate to Denver, Colorado. And so she had to move. And so that was the end of that.
Now, I understand the Exotics auditioned for the Ted Mack Amateur Hour in Minneapolis. What is the story on that?
Oh, it was pretty exciting, actually.
And when was that?
It was in March of 65. It was pretty exciting. Our parents drove us up there, and we had to Sheraton Ritz Hotel, and we had to take an elevator up with all our equipment set up, and we played 8 days a week by the Beatles, and we passed the audition, and we were just ecstatic. We were so excited. So then we came home, and Owatonna and everybody was all excited that we, you know, passed the audition. What really happened was Little Caesar and the Conspirators were so excited. They said, well, why don't you use our drums and our big amps, and then, you know, that'll really be, you know, look really cool. Well, it wasn't what they wanted, you know, because then we didn't look amateur. And we weren't used to their equipment either, so then we didn't pass the second time around. So
you went back for a second audition. What song did you play for that?
Same thing, 8 days a week.
Okay, so you did not pass the second audition.
Right.
And you weren't...
Because we looked too professional with all their big... They had Fender showmans and that kind of stuff. And, you know, we were used to our little Fender, you know, Duosonic amps and all that stuff or whatever it's called. Vibrolux. I think I had a Vibrolux or Vibroburb or something like that. You know, so we didn't, then we graduated to Vox amps, you know, because the Beatles had Vox, so we had to have Vox too, so.
So you're saying you looked too professional?
Yeah,
or?
Because it was an amateur hour, you know, and you're supposed to go in there and you're not supposed to look that professional. You're supposed to be good, but you're not supposed to be professional because it's an amateur hour. Well, we went in looking like, oh, we got stacks of this and we got these big drums, and Sue Green didn't know how to play all those drums, and we didn't know how to run the amps right, and, you know, we looked too professional, and we didn't know how to use their equipment, and it was just a mistake, that's all.
So, in addition to looking professional, you're saying that the band didn't sound that good as well?
Because we weren't used to their equipment, yeah. I mean, I didn't know how to Fender
okay.
Showman.
Was that a big disappointment for you?
Yes, it was, but, you know, we just kept on going because we loved to play.
Now, when did you first come in contact with David Wachter from David Anthony Productions?
That was in 66.
You told me in a prior interview that David Wachter was contacted by a booking agent in Japan who wanted to book the band on a tour in Japan. What happened with that?
The band had to turn that down because they thought we were something other than an all-girl band because of the name of the Exotics, and you can fill in the blanks on that. And so he said, no, we're not doing this. So then that's when they wanted us to change our name.
Okay, David Wachter suggested you change your name.
Yes.
Did the group have a band vehicle at this time?
66, we did buy a Dodge van, and we saved our money because, you know, we were living at home, so we saved all the money that we made when we played to be able to buy that so we could drive it. You know, our parents didn't like it because we were 16, but we had to drive it, and I think they got kind of tired of pulling that trailer around for us all the time, you know. So we did get a 1966 brand new Dodge van, saved for it. There was times when, and I can't remember if Hardy was driving the van, and Hardy is Jim Winch. I can't remember if he was driving the van or why David Walker, Anthony, whatever, would come and get us, but he drove us in his Thunderbird to the gigs.
Was that his convertible Thunderbird?
Yeah, I believe so. It was cold. It wasn't very warm when we were driving in the winter.
So he'd have the trailer behind his Thunderbird, or?
No, I don't know what the deal. I can't remember for sure. If one of the band boys or the band boys were driving the van, or he just came to make sure we got to the gig, or maybe the van, it might have been prior to the van. I really can't remember chronologically on that one.
So you mentioned Jim Winch as one of your band boys. Was there another one?
Yep, John Aho, A-H-O. And they were both, they carried the equipment, they loaded the equipment. They, you know, Jim drove the van. They helped us set up if there was anything wrong. We called Jim Winch Hardy because he looked like Hardy from Laurel and Hardy. That's why we called him that.
Did you have an actual PA system for the vocals?
Yeah, we had, it was Electro Voice, two columns with, a four channel with the knobs. I could see it. It was gray.
So did somebody actually run a soundboard?
No.
We
set the vocals and let it go. You know, that was back then in 65, 66, 60. You know, we didn't have anybody running sound.
Did you have any kind of a light show?
Nope. Just all, you know, whatever was on the stage or whatever a club had or whatever.
So since Sue Conklin left the band in 1965, were there any other changes in the band lineup?
Not until 67.
What happened in 67?
In 67, we were about to graduate. Carol decided to get married and have a family, so she was going to leave the band. And Sue Hubbell joined because David Anthony went out. I believe her band's name was The Illusions. He went out to them and said, you know, you play keyboard and you sing, I'd like to keep, you know, the 19th Amendment going. And I think he might have set that up so that we found her, and she was fun to play with, so we had a good time with that. And we, she joined the band, but we changed kind of the stuff that we played. It was more going towards R&B because of what she sounded like.
So who took over on lead vocals at that point?
She did for the most part, and I did too.
The lineup now is Susie Mork, lead guitar, lead vocals, Sue Hubbell, keyboards and lead vocals, Linda Knutson, bass guitar and vocals, Sue Green on drums, correct?
Right, that's correct.
And when did the band relocate to Minneapolis?
In 67, right after we graduated, Linda Knutson and I moved up to Minneapolis. I don't remember where somebody said, I know somebody that's looking for roommates. And I don't remember who told us that or whatever, but we hooked up with Judy Cuttrell. There was a couple other girls, I think, it was like a one-bedroom apartment with all kinds of mattresses, and we were trying to find jobs so we could, you know, pay the rent until we could get everything going. Linda Knutson decided, you know, I'm just not going to do this. So she dropped out, and Sue Green was commuting from Owatonna to play with us with Sue Hubbell, and she got tired of that too, and then so that's when Sue Hubbell and Sue Green and Linda Knutson left.
Okay, now how did the new band name, the 19th Amendment, come about?
David Anthony, I called him David Anthony. Anyway, he wanted us to have a different name because of that Japan thing. So we decided to put an ad in the paper, and I think it was the Minneapolis paper actually, $50 to anybody that came up with a new name for us that sounded good. But after we went through them all, we didn't like any of them, so we came up with the 19th Amendment because it was women's right to vote, but it also was like, you know, let women play rock and roll, kind of, sort of.
So that name goes back to the actual 19th Amendment to the United States Constitution, passed by Congress in 1919 and ratified by the states in 1920, that gave women the right to vote, correct?
Correct.
So what places did the band start playing in the Twin Cities?
You know, we had a hard time playing in the Twin Cities.
Why was that?
Because it was dominated by, you know, the major bands, the Underbeat, TC Atlantic, and then there was the Ravens and the Jokers Wild and then the South Fork. I mean, so we had a hard time trying to find, you know, be able to play there. We did play a place in, I think it's, was it Robbinsdale, called Someplace Else? We played there right before Linda left. Linda and Sue Green and Sue Hubble, we did play there. Other than that, we had a hard time getting into the scene. I don't know what the deal was or whatever, but then finally we started playing, and we did play Magoo's and Lucky's and, you know, lots of venues around town.
So David Anthony had you playing a lot of out-of-town gigs?
Oh, yeah.
Do you recall some of the cities?
We played lots of towns in Minnesota. I mean, lots of them. You know, we're talking like Red Wing, we're talking Maple Lake, we're talking Alexandria, we're talking St. Cloud and Duluth, southern Minnesota, Albert Lee, Austin, that kind of stuff.
Ballrooms and armories?
Yeah, ballrooms and armories.
Did you go out and see a lot of the local Twin Cities bands?
Oh, yeah.
Did you have a favorite local band?
In the Exotics, it was the Underbeats.
Okay.
When everybody was in it. But after we moved to up to Minneapolis, you know, we saw the Jokers Wild, we saw South 40, we saw the Ravens were before the South 40 and all that, and we saw TC Atlantic and all kinds of, I mean, a lot of the band. We just hung out with everybody, and it was fun. I mean, everybody got along. The Minnesota, in my opinion, the Minnesota band venue still, as you can see, I mean, goes on today. Everybody always got along with everybody and sometimes jammed with everybody, you know.
Now, as a guitar player and a singer, did you have a favorite local guitar player or players and a favorite local singer or singers?
You know, I really liked Lonnie Knight. I really did. I thought he was a good guitar, really good guitar player. And I really liked him a lot. I liked Dick Wiggin. Dick Wiggin was really good.
Okay, how about singers?
Singers? Nah, not so much.
Okay.
Because I was not always not a lead vocalist. I was usually harmonies, and I was more into guitar.